Hey everybody, Peter here. Quick programming note, the opening segment of this episode was recorded on November 20-something or other, before the Thanksgiving holiday. Sorry for the delay in getting this one out. The latter segment with Adam String with Jupiter String Radio is up to date and will be funny and snarky and timely as well. Thank you. All right, welcome to the RMNB Nerd Media Podcast, where I discuss nerd media things with a person who has no sleep and no free time. Ian, have you heard the news about the new Lord of the Rings Amazon series? What do you think they're going to do? Do you think it's going to be mostly like Silmarillion? I know they're not going to retell Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit, because those were just on, you know, big movies. Maybe some Lost Tales, maybe some stories about Aragorn and Arwen. What do you think?
Okay, so the only real Lord of the Rings observation I can make is that the last one I watched, it was 4.5 hours of just everyone walking.
And then, yeah, no, that's the whole story. So, Ian, Star Trek Discovery has wrapped up its first season on CBS All Access. Do you think that it's exploitative of Star Trek fans to put the first return of that show in like serialized television in a pay to play medium? What do you think about that?
All I can say is that I've been DVRing Hardball on MSNBC and been watching at 1 a.m. every night.
All right, now I gotta break with the bit, because Jesus Christ, Ian, you're watching Hardball like on DVR? I can't even watch Hardball at all. I haven't been able to stomach Hardball in like 8 years.
Oh man, I have all the Washington Post columnists and reporters like memorized now, so I don't know.
I don't know what's wrong with me either. Chris Matthews is a Maryland guy, right?
No, he's, I think he's Pennsylvania. Chip. Pennsylvania.
Oh, because what's his name? What's his wife's name? The old broadcaster, not old broadcaster. She's,
I don't even
something,
know.
Something Matthews, Kathleen Matthews. Was she running for Congress or something in Maryland? Doesn't matter. Not important.
I think so. Actually, yes. I didn't know they were married. So there you go.
Every once in a while, she comes on and interviews him. Maybe she does it on his like weekend show. I know too much about Chris Matthews. Ian, I want to thank you for taking time out of your very busy schedule to help us chat about the hockey team. It would be really easy for you to just participate in this podcast that we're doing here, but you're really getting involved. And those have two totally different meanings, those two words that you just used.
Yeah, I completely agree. Participating and involvement are just so different. Like, you know, if you look it up in the dictionary, they don't say the same things, Peter. They don't.
They definitely don't mean the exact same thing. When you put up the participation mode t-shirt, I had like a little Google hole memory K-hole experience, like going back to like the Bryce Harper thing, where like Bryce Harper's like talking to a bunch of kids just crapping on participation trophies, and then your article very astutely like does like the millennial jab, like these millennials just expect participation trophies for everything. I mean, I guess we are we technically millennials?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. And you know what? I'm with Bryce on this, is that I hate participation trophies too. I just, the whole thing with Verona is,
this is not ironic. This is like, you really don't like participation trophies.
No, first of all, I as someone who has played basketball, I remember getting mad when we would get a trophy and we'd like not make the playoffs. I'd be like, well, what's the point of this? This means nothing to me. You know what I mean? So okay. I'm a very competitive person. I'm not saying that participation trophies are bad. Just for me, I think for every person in general, it's different.
I see, and then I get what you're getting at. So, but like what you have done is you have dodged the like background cultural issues about the participation trophy, and you're saying, no, I literally don't like participation trophies, like just the thing, not the sociological import of it from like a generation versus generation.
Exactly. I think that people should be propped up and supported. So like, I actually like the idea. Just for me personally, I am a wildly competitive person, as you know. So for me, it doesn't do anything, and it actually makes me mad. And Bryce Harper is the same way, is that he's not here to be there. He's here to be the best player ever. So for him, it annoys him, and it makes sense. But in general, I think it's a good thing.
Is he gonna go to the Yankees?
Oh yeah!
Every time there's a baseball player within 100 miles of me, I'm like, are they going to go to the Yankees?
Yeah, just like Machado. I'm sure they both will.
And then we're both going to be on the Yankees soon.
And then we'll both die inside and not watch baseball anymore. And
the affirmation of being propped up, as you said, I think is the core narrative of the, I think it's at 30 articles and counting that you've written on Jacob Vrana in the last 4 days. And he is one among many of Capitals players that we have asked our team and our patrons and the general public to rank over recent days. But I wanted to get your take on what players have stood out to you and which ones have not. Who are you digging? Who are you not digging so far?
Oh, well, thanks for asking. I think, let's just stay on Vrana for a second, is I've actually been impressed by Vrana and his underlying play. For him, I worry about that aspect of his game and not necessarily the production aspects, because he's a guy where, his talent offensively is not in dispute. So I really thought that he's been very, very good this year. And despite, that second line when he was with Ovechkin and Kuznetsov being so high event, and kind of struggling defensively, I don't think that is completely on him. And so I hope that he can kind of find his way. And I hope that the head coach doesn't, kind of take him under again this year. Like, it seems like last year he kind of just completely lost his game after coming up to Washington. I think Vrana was like, well, I was playing good. Why did I get sent down? And so other players that I've kind of been impressed with, I would definitely say, weirdly enough, at least lately, okay, and lately is important, Tom Wilson, I've actually thought, has been playing some really good hockey. Like, he's been doing a lot of little things. I thought he was the best player against Colorado, which A, is kind of sad. B, though, says a lot about the fact that I think he's finding himself offensively and defensively. And if he stays on the ice, he's, the key for him is staying on the ice. But I think there are some things that are happening with him that are good, and if he stays on that track, he may have a much more productive season than he did last year. I've also been I've been really impressed by John Carlson, though I thought against Colorado he was very bad, but the how he's handled his 30 minutes a night has been unbelievable to me. And so
he's very highly regarded among, I think he was the highest rated player among the general public and among our patrons, whereas among Russian Machiners, he was middle of the pack.
That's interesting. Yeah. And there might be some the thing I liked about this was that it's against your own expectations. So for that, for everyone, that's different.
For Vrana and Wilson, Vrana was like just a smidge above average, like as expected, and Tom Wilson was exactly as expected, which I think is fascinating. I think it speaks to like the absence of expectations about Vrana, this being technically his rookie year, even though he played 21, I think, last season, and Tom Wilson just being like, I'm going to Tom Wilson every day. I wake up Tom Wilsoning and I go to Tom Wilsoning, and in between, it's nonstop 24/7 Tom Wilsoning.
I had a lot of bias for Tom lately, and I guess for whatever reason, I'm hopeful that that continues.
The crocodile and the bird, and the crocodile's like, I don't know what the little old folktale is, but there's some animal that eats animals, like other animals, and then the one animal wants to take it across the creek, and the other animal's like, no way, you'll eat me. And the other one's like, no, it won't. And then it takes him to the other side of the creek and then eats him. He's like, of course I did. I'm an animal. That would have been better if I knew which animals they were, the story. But you get the idea. Like, I'm not going to fall for it, Tom Wilson. I know you are a scorpion crocodile or whatever. I don't know what the animal
was. I get that. And I do not want to take anything away from anyone who says that he's never going to develop and he's never going to be more than a fighter. And I have been really hard on him. And honestly, a lot of times I'm hard on him because there's potentially a knowledge that I know it may get back to him. And I just want him to stop fighting. I just want him to stop fighting.
That's a great point.
Just play hockey. Just play hockey and let's see what you have.
No, I'm on that bandwagon too. I was since like the third month of his participation in this league. We've been on the, maybe don't fight all the time.
Just get away from that and let's just see what you actually are, because I don't think we've actually seen what he is. If you're taking a big chunk out of the game, you lose the flow of the game. And even saw against Colorado, again, it was a horrible game for the Caps. But you see him, and he's focusing. He is skating. He created the only goal that the Capitals scored that wasn't, like, trash. That power play goal that Kuznetsov scored was kind of trash. But, you know, where Beagle lost the faceoff, but then it went off, the puck clinked off a skate. He used his good skating, which, again, is his biggest strength, which makes no sense for a 6'5" guy. Yeah. And he threw a pass and they scored. So I don't know. Like I get the argument. I get both you and Pat's very passionate argument and Slack all the time. Which
that's the bust argument. I'm no longer on the bust argument. I don't care anymore. My argument is that he never will be a scorer, and it's obvious. But and I don't listen. I'm not going to cannibalize an article that I will be writing as soon as it's in the news. All right, you gave me three good reviews for Carlson, Wilson, and Vrana. Give me one less positive review.
Oh, I gotta think. I gotta literally think who's on the team.
Well, let me give you some names from the bottom of the average list. Aaron Ness, Philip Grubauer, Tyler, I don't know his last name, I can't pronounce it, Brooks Orpik, Taylor Chorney, Andre Burakovsky, Brett Connolly, and Alex Chasen. Oh, and Jay Beagle is on there too. So those are the dregs according to our average scores.
Now I'm recalling. So I have about three or four of those guys. I'll just go through really quick. Orpik has been so bad, but like it's among my expectations. You know, it's hard to describe Orpik because it's not really his fault. Because last year, if you would have asked me, he was a 5 for me in terms of how he outperformed expectations. But that was because he was getting a role that he could thrive in with a player that was good. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean because I feel the exact same way.
Like so, but I would go 0 because he's been just even worse than I could even fathom. You know, and a lot of that is just because of how he's been deployed. Taylor Chorney has been just really bad. I don't understand some people who text me that are very passionate about how Taylor Chorney just needs a chance. And I'm like, I don't see it. And then I would say Grubauer has been bad, but again, it's not been him. And Ness.
He's got 90% though. I mean, he's playing like bad Neuvirth era hockey right now.
This is going to sound weird, but like Ness, maybe the biggest disappointment on the team, because every time he's come up into the lineup, in the past 2 years, he's been, I don't want to say unbelievable, but he's been one of those guys that disappears and does really well. Like, he's just chipping it out. He is fine. And for whatever reason this year, it's like he forgot how to play hockey.
Yeah, it's tough to watch. Regarding Brooks Orpik, it reminds me of this allegory I heard where this one animal wants to get across the water, like the river, and it asks this other animal, hey, can you carry me? And the other animal is like, no, I will drown. I can't take you across the water. And then the one animal is like, well, take me anyway. And the other animal is like, don't do that. We'll drown. And then they do it, and they both drown. And the animal that asked the other animal is like, what happened? We both drowned. And the other animal's like, yeah, I can't swim. Like, I can't do this. That's, again, it would be better if I knew what the animals were in that analogy. I don't really remember that story.
I think that other animal is a zebra that looks like John Carlson.
Poor John Carlson. All right. I want to just sort of zoom out to the larger scope here. I'm sure you've seen the conversation. You've heard sort of like a, well, did you have a chance to read Barry Sarulugas? Column in the Washington Post on Friday, speaking with Brian McClellan. What did you make of that article?
I think the first thing I always have to say before I criticize Barry Sferluga is that he is a great writer, and he's someone that I've read a bunch during my career before actually becoming a writer, and someone who I believe has a talent that I could never match and a lot of people couldn't match. As a columnist having opinions about the Capitals, I don't know what has happened to him, but it just seems like he's compromised. And by compromised, I mean it's like he got Brian McClellan's contact information and now he's just spouting good PR for the team. And McClellan. I just don't understand the logic behind any of what he's writing about. And I think you could probably describe the fallacies of what's wrong in his logic and how he's writing and not really like he's basing some of his opinions off things that aren't true, and then giving these quotes. Like, he just seems like he's been given cotton candy quotes to Brian McClellan and just putting it out there. And I just don't understand. He's a critical person, so I just don't understand why he's doing that. So, and that's really messed up to say, but just how I feel.
Let's set the stage a bit, because it's around Thanksgiving time, and that is when people get fired from the Washington Capitals historically. And I don't think that Brian McClellan is in imminent danger of losing his job, but the team is way underperforming, even underperforming the not going to be suck, we're still a good team levels of quality that, you know, were set in the immediate preseason. And I mean, like, a lot of what my output has been over the last few days and weeks has been like, hey guys, the Caps are alarmingly bad. And I think that, you know, not so much from like the fan community or from silly bloggers like us, but perhaps from the general fans or from ownership, is probably coming back to the team at some point. And that column, I'm going to use the present perfect tense like people do in sports. That column from Cervelluga doesn't happen unless McClellan is embattled in his job and needs to manage expectations, or more specifically, lower expectations, which is honestly the job of any middle manager, which is truly his position, you know, subordinate to Dick Patrick, subordinate to Taliansis. And that's exactly what's going on. Like, I think perhaps Barry Cervelluga feels that way. I don't know, but it seemed to me like that was a faithful echo of what the general manager wants his superiors to hear. And I think Barry did a great job of, echoing that sentiment and carrying that water. I think that, and this sort of like the general concept I want to get into right now is like, what does this current situation mean for coaching and for management? I think that there's a growing pattern of information out there that Barry Trotz is nearing the end of his time with this team.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Whether rightly or wrongly. And I think that I've been on the wrongly standpoint. I mean, I think he's a great coach. I think he's making a lot of really goofy, curious decisions. But the thing that is throwing the red flag for me is the roster construction of this team heading into the season after what was an apparently terrible offseason. And I know that there were some, of course there's going to be some coming back down to earth after last season. There's no place higher than first place in regular season standings. There is, I think, a championship. There's a whole thing that happens after the regular season's over, I heard about, where they have a cup.
Just a rumor though.
But it's impossible, literally impossible, for the Capitals to do better than they did in the last two regular seasons. So, of course, they were going to do worse. They definitely weren't going to do the same. But how far that is, what threshold you would calculate for disappointment, I think that we've surpassed. I mean, the team is barely 500, and the only reason they're 500 is because Braden Holtby has been excellent in most of his appearances. So I think Brian McClellan's job is, you know, his seat is warm, to use that abused notion. And Barry Trotz is probably red hot, as you can sort of get from like the pattern of things he's been saying to the press lately.
Yeah. And you can also tell there's a little bit of an anger with Trotz, just at least with how been communicating lately. And he's usually a very, you know, positive guy. And even when I remember before the season when it came out, and I don't know why it came out, that he was in his last year of his contract, and he had to answer questions from the reporters like that, where he was like, oh, I'm fine, it doesn't affect me at all. But he was just like, you could tell there was like an excitement in his voice, like, I am really, really bothered by this. And to be fair, too, I mean, a guy who's been coaching for almost 20 years, regardless of what the team did in the playoffs, a coach doesn't deserve that. You know what I mean? Like, he should either be axed in the summer or he should be extended. And I am a believer in that. So I take Trotz's side on that. But, you know, where the team is right now, I agree with you. It's, did the offseason have to be that bad? You know, that's kind of the question you have to ask yourself. And did the team really understand or evaluate itself correctly? Is you know, going to the moon to be able to protect Tom Wilson and, let's say, Lars Eller. Lars Eller is an important third center, but you also have a ton of guys in the minors who could likely step up and take another role in that fourth line if you have to promote someone up or do whatever. I mean, look at Chandler Stephenson. He could have probably been the third line center. So when you look at it that way and you say, okay, we, you know, then we have three defensemen. You know, you let Carlson be one of those. I get it, even though he's in his last year. But if they would have protected Nate Schmidt as one of those four defensemen, I feel like this entire team would be completely different. You know what I mean? And I'm not trying Absolutely. To say that because Nate Schmidt is a good player. I'm just saying that because he is a great young player. And like that, it just their depth on defense, on top of the poor defense that their offensive players have been playing, which has not really been talked about enough, I feel like, has just completely torpedoed the team. And going back to the column, the thing that I struggle with is because I have a lot, you know, as someone who looks up to the Washington Post and sees the people there as extremely talented writers who could write around me, is that I feel like with Barry, when he's just communicating the team's perspective as his own, I just feel like that's not very fair to people who are passionate about the team that may not know about blogs or see the stuff that we do. I wish Barry would dabble in some of the analytics so that his arguments could either be kind of, you know, sussed out more. So when I see articles like that, it's just so frustrating because I just want this, you know, blogosphere and this web sphere that covers the Capitals to really kind of be accepting the same truths. It's kind of the problem with politics these days, or is that?
Oh God, you're really getting into this, aren't you?
Yeah, okay, really quick. It's just like Republicans.
Here, let me hand you the shovel. Keep digging.
No, it's just the Republicans believe different facts than maybe sometimes, you know, the truth actually is. And, you know, obviously, I guess the truth is somewhat subjective to who you are, but you know, I just feel like that column wasn't really communicating reality. And that's what frustrated me the most, because of all the people that writes, Barry could. And that's just my opinion.
Yeah, that's fair. The I don't know, what bothered me was the tone of it more than anything else. I mean, like the quotes from McClellan, I was totally expecting. And like, honestly, I feel like McClellan's doing his job by managing expectations. And I feel like I'm doing my job by saying that McClellan has done a subpar job since the summer after being just beyond excellent for the, you know, prior few seasons. But the way Barry posed it in his column was like, oh my God, you entitled fans, you've been spoiled by being a good hockey team. I don't know about that, guys.
After Barry wrote a column saying the opposite months before. Like, it just doesn't, like, they're still going to be a good team, guys. Calm down. Look, you know, look at these hard decisions. And
the thing is, they should be a good team. They should be a good team.
They should. You know,
they don't have to be this bad, but, like, I never for a minute thought that we would be nearing Thanksgiving and Taylor Chorney would be getting a shift every night. And, like, Smith Pelly would be in the on the Ovechkin line. And Stevenson, who's been pretty fair, has been in the top six. But, like, the amount of ice time that Aaron Ness has gotten and Tyler Grunovac and Alex Chason, like, I am astonished that this is the roster that he went with. That, like, Madison...
Bowie.
That Madison Bowie, that's going to happen every time.
I know.
That Madison Bowie didn't get a crack at the lineup until like the middle of October after, I guess it was right when Niskanen got hurt. And like Christian Juice, like no one even was going to give, they weren't going to give Christian Juice a look. They wanted, like, Barry Trotz, all this like stability stuff, like he wanted to run with Chorney and Ness as his third pairing defense. And there was no apparent plan to keep Brooks Orpik from having his ice time go up at least 2 minutes a night. And instead, it's gone up 4.5 minutes a night. The dude is 37 years old. That's just, I can't, there's no justification for that kind of roster and ice time management. It's just insane. It's negligence.
And this is what bothers me truly. And I'm not, you know, Chasen is an okay guy. I've heard from several people who watch the Capitals a lot that they get frustrated that, you know, people have criticized Marcus Johansson, who lived in the crease his entire life, as someone who's soft, but Chasen kind of really stays to the perimeter. And, you know, the thing to me is that the guys they replaced at the NHL roster level are guys who could have been easily replaced by Hershey. So why do you have these guys in Hershey that you're telling, you know, if you work hard and play hard, you're going to get a roster spot. And then when there's actually a perfect spot for them, they go out of their way to add these guys who don't really add much to the team, like DSP, like Chasen. Like, you can't tell me that DSP is better than like Travis Boyd or Chris Bourque. And it drives me insane. You know, the Matthias Bau guy could probably be better than some of the other guys that are in the lineup. So you just wonder also the message they're sending to the guys in Hershey that even if you play well in Hershey, we're still going to, minimize you as much as possible. And
I want you to walk back your DSP hate there. I think that he's done way better than I thought. Everyone seems to have him as average.
I'll give you that. He has been way better than being one of the worst possession players in the league for the New Jersey Devils last year. He has far surpassed that.
He's been fine when he hasn't with poor, tired old Brooks Orpik. I would say that he's been a positive player. It's just weird to see him in that spot. And in that spot, plus the way that the Ovechkin line is being deployed with Orpik, it looks horrible, but he's not. It's been okay.
Okay, I'll give you that. And he has shown flashes of offense that you're like, wow. Like the blind backhand goal, the cross-ice pass to Ovechkin for a goal. It's just that why would you give him a chance over one of the Hershey guys that could, like Nathan Walker, for instance? Grant,
I believe it's pronounced Nathan Walker.
Thank you. But that's the thing, is that I just don't understand some of those decisions. And that kind of stuff kind of can have a far-reaching effect to the guys in the minors that, you know, well, I really have no chance. Like Liam O'Brien for DSP. I would take Liam O'Brien if you asked me over the summer, because I don't see how, if you look at DSP's mark last year in the NHL to what, let's say, Liam O'Brien did in Hershey last year, why you wouldn't give the Hershey guy a chance. Because that kind of stuff, if Liam O'Brien has a lot of success in Washington, what is it going to do to the guys in Hershey? It's going to give them even more motivation. Because if you see a guy like Liam O'Brien, who's been working his butt off for 3 or 4 years in Hershey and come out of nowhere as an undrafted guy and get a roster spot in Washington and do well, that says to you, if I work really hard, I'm going to get a shot too. But I don't think that there's that opportunity, even after they lost so many players last year, that guys are truly motivated. And you know what? I want to bring this conversation, you go ahead and respond, but I want to bring this conversation back to one more thing about McClellan, too.
Go for it.
Okay. One of the things that I don't understand is why McClellan will open himself up to Barry Svrluga and talk to him when, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, if this is oversaying our worth to fans, but just seeing our numbers over the years, sometimes I believe our website is like the heart and soul of what a lot of Capitals fans think. And I'm fine with people totally disagreeing with us about that or me, but like, I don't understand why the Capitals try to sometimes respond to certain things through the Washington Post instead of coming to us and maybe having those conversations and answering those hard questions, because I think that their answers to some of our hard questions could really, you know, mitigate some of this fan angst. And
I had a really snarky joke that I wanted to do, but now I got to have a response. Actually, I'm going to do both. I'm going to give you the snarky joke first and then the sincere one second. First of all, Ian, I was totally lost by what you said there. The logic was fine, but I find it completely inconsistent when you pronounce it Washington or Washington. And now I think it's a total affectation on your part, like having a monocle or something like that. The sincere part is, if I would do the exact same thing if I was McClellan, because I don't want to give any more credence to the outlet that criticizes me. I want to go over their head when I want to respond to them. I want to say, well, who cares about that blog? They don't know what they're talking about. I'm going to respond directly to the paper of record because they've got more blah, 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 blah. I think you know, if you're like a passionate Caps fan, you're reading us and a few others, whereas the distribution of, you know, the paper Washington Post is going to be, you know, an order of magnitude larger even than our web traffic in a column, at least, you know, like, you know, Barry's column got printed on paper, whereas, and that goes, you know, around the planet. So I get it. It's strategically, I just don't agree with it in principle.
Well, I think that goes for a lot of teams too. It's like, you know, Steve Dangle, for instance, is that guy has the heart and soul of Leafs fans. So, yeah. You know, and the Leafs are doing a lot more with him. And I think that that gives them a lot more good PR because Steve Dangle is beloved, not only in Toronto, but everywhere. And so it's just one thing that I've struggled to understand.
I'm still on the fence about him.
Well, oh, Dangle? Oh, really?
Yeah, it's iffy. The spring was pretty, you know, he's the best. I think that gets us, I mean, that's about a 30-minute cold open for our podcast.
I like it.
Before we wrap up our session of white dudes doing sports yelling, are there any other people you want to alienate or criticize? And is there anything else that we need to complain about? I think that the broadcast team is doing great this year.
Yeah, minus the authentic fan thing, which means absolutely nothing.
I still don't get it.
I don't get it.
It like invites like the fake fan joke, you know?
I know.
Since day one of us doing Rush Machine, we're like, you know what we shouldn't do? Like fan policing. That really shouldn't be our thing. We should be open. Yeah. And, like, the authentic fan like thing is like, well, what's an inauthentic fan?
I know. That opens up to so many bad questions.
It's a guy with a Penguins jersey on and just wearing a Caps t-shirt over it and then like a fake mustache over it. And you're like, oh, I'm a Caps fan. I'm like, no, you're not. And he's like, then he's like, prove that you're not a Caps fan by asking us if we want to go get pizza after this. And he goes, Yins want to get, oh, damn it, you caught me. I'm a Pens fan.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think the broadcasts have been really good. I don't know. The only thing that I can really think about is I need to criticize my son a little bit. He's too cute. Yeah,
rip into him. There you go.
I need to rip Ethan. He's just too cute. And this guy just wants to wake up every 3 hours or 30 minutes. He wants to wake up every 30 minutes because he loves us so much and just start screaming and get our attention so we'll play with him. And I think I slept combined, 7 days last week, 20 hours, maybe. And I feel like that's generous. I'm starting to hallucinate. Like I can't, like things are double. Like sometimes when I write things, I just write words and I'm not like, I don't even know what's coming out. It's just happening. I'm not even physically here sometimes. Yeah. Well, I guess I'm physically here, but mentally I'm on some other planet where I'm actually sleeping. So
I got to say though, the Instagram material is off the charts.
The kid's cute. I'll give him that. Fun. Too cute. I'm telling you, too cute. Like I just want to spend all my time with him. I just want to hug him and kiss him all the time and not actually cover hockey at all. So, you know, I got to rip into this guy.
All right. Go get back to Ethan. Ian, thank you so much for hanging out on the potty.
All right. Thanks,
which
guys.
Which is what I call it.
Potty. It sounds like, right. Yeah.
And now it's time for the RMNB podcast.
Hey, I'm on the line with Strings right here. We just got off of the Jaber Shrink Radio podcast, and we were talking about, I don't know, we were talking about Nathan Walker getting sent down and getting lost to Edmonton. I want to reiterate, though, that like I think he's not to the same degree as Forsberg, but he's going to be one of those players that just bothers everybody for years and years because I think that he could really flourish in Edmonton. I think that that's a good coach and a team with a bigger depth problems than the Caps have. I know that's saying something, but they probably have like the biggest, you know, rail coursey differential between the top six and the bottom six in the league. I can't think of maybe, I don't know, like a team like Arizona might be up like there too, but like I think, and he's going to get PK time. I think he's going to be a stud and it'll be really good to see. I think Edmonton knew what they were doing for once with that pickup and, you know, Walker might get time with, you know, RNH or not, probably not with McDavid unless things go going terrible.
He might even get a shift there. I mean, yeah. Lucic has played up there, and if Lucic can do it, then anybody can do it.
So. How is Lucic still even playing? And Draisaitl, like
a disastrous contract.
Poor Edmonton, by the way. And I think they don't necessarily realize it, but I think they're dead men walking already, which is really upsetting. Like that team is going to have a rough time making the playoffs. They're going to have a Mondo pace from here on out. But anyway,
should have kept Walker and tried to get Puljujarvi out of them for something.
That guy's good.
Yeah.
Dang.
He is. Early draft pick a couple years ago.
Isn't he like Sikh? Isn't he like the first Sikh hockey player in the NHL?
Puljujarvi?
Like yeah.
No, Puljujarvi is like Finnish.
Oh, who am I thinking of? Who's the first Sikh NHL player?
No, there is somebody. I'm not recalling his name, but it's not Puljujarvi.
Oh, it's wait, no. I'm gonna butcher this name. Juhar Kayari he's a Punjabi guy. What's the guy you're talking about's name?
Puljujarvi. Let me look.
Puljujarvi. Okay,
Puljujarvi was drafted like early by Edmonton. He was the guy that was supposed to be picked by Columbus. Then Columbus went up off the board a couple years ago, so Edmonton fans were all ecstatic. And then, you know, he's still kind of in the minors though. He's up and down right now.
Okay, yeah, I was thinking about the Sikh dude who is just like he's doing pretty damn good on the fourth line, and he is on the Oilers. And he's from.
Punjab. Yeah.
So I know, like, yes, I am still.
K H A I R A.
Yes. And I'm still that painfully culturally ignorant white dude. I'm sorry. That's a good player. That's all I was trying to get out of there.
I was talking about Jesse Puljujarvi, but that is okay.
That makes more sense. And, God, I'm so embarrassed.
Don't worry about it.
Did you think that, Bertros was going to get fired a week and a half ago?
We talked about this a little bit on the Chambers Drink Radio podcast, but when we were, my dad and I think I texted him, and my text was something like, if the Capitals don't like win one of these games, like kind of largely, and really show that they can like swing with one of these big teams, I don't think Barry Trotz is going to make it like through this homestand. You know, this is a year the Capitals have to do well. We know that the roster has holes. The Capitals know the roster has holes. People at the Washington Post, I'm not talking about Isabel, but other writers there have kind of been up and down about whether the roster has holes. It's very unclear what some of them think. And, I probably shouldn't have said that, but...
Oh, we're going there, by the way. As soon as we're done with this, I'm going back to that topic.
Oh, God. But all in all, I thought Barry Trotz was probably going to get canned if the Capitals weren't able to get some wins. And fortunately for both Barry and for the team, the Capitals were able to kind of get it together, and they've looked relatively good in this homestand.
When you said fortunately for Barry, were you talking about Barry, the head coach of the Washington Capitals, Trotz, or Barry, the columnist for the Washington Post?
Peter, you're going to get me in trouble here, man.
Let me start by saying that I totally agree with you, by the way, that like Isabel is doing amazing writing this season for the Capitals, and it's riveting. I thought she had some excellent pieces about like Oshie and Beagle in the last few weeks. And in Verona too. I like that stuff's great, and we've got an excellent beat reporter, and it's I feel like there's been a an embarrassment of riches on that front for years and years,
for years in DC. Sure.
That said, I don't necessarily love the columnists, and I don't know why. Maybe it's just like because can you call me a blogger? And I write about the team from a very particular perspective, and I try to treat it in sort of like a clearinghouse ombudsman way, where like I want to like whenever the coach or the GM says anything, I have to adopt a skeptical approach to it. I think because I like the team more than they do. That's what I believe in my head. It's a sickness. And sometimes I see that same sort of mealy-mouthed, nebulous, it's sort of all... passion and zeitgeist writing out of the columnists that I would hear out of the people who are really just holding on to their jobs with white knuckles year to year, because it's a really tough league to stick in. I think this is actually this segment of you and me talking right now is going to go right after one of me and Ian chatting about that the same column because we recorded it like a week ago. So I don't want to belabor it too much, but I think that, I don't know, if you're not paying super close attention to the team, you might think like, yeah, this had to happen. The team had to be this bad. And no, the team doesn't have to be this bad.
Oh, man.
And the record is pretty okay considering how bad they are. But like, they were pretty dang bad for a minute there.
I mean, in another article from the same columnist, I think came out a couple days ago, which was like a backtrack on the article that I guess you and Ian kind of talked about last week. Or that's how I read it. And I think you're right. I mean, the team didn't have to be as bad as they were. I think it's a little, it was a little, I thought it was a little condescending when some of the kind of editorial stuff came out during the summer that would kind of, I don't want to say like kind of took a shot or degraded the thoughts of both bloggers and fans that thought that the team made unnecessary moves during the summer that hurt them. I think the team's performance to start the year kind of showed that the naysayers were right, or were at least not that far off, that the moves that were made were not the best moves. I mean, you can say that the Kuznetsov's been good recently. He was not good to start the year, but people weren't really trashing that deal because you got to keep, I mean, it makes sense to keep your two centers. Oshie started the year really hot. He's been okay. But the team as a whole really suffered from a depth perspective. And we saw the hole that Nate Schmidt being out really, what it did to the team. And I think the article that we're kind of, really, I'm kind of thinking of them now as like a collection of editorial articles that came from the Washington Post, done by Isabel, that kind of... they kind of said that you guys are crazy for thinking that the team isn't going to be good. You know, Brian McClellan, it was kind of like a bit of a fluff piece in my mind for the organization, where Brian McClellan was able to make statements about kind of why he thought the team would still be good, which is fine. He should think that. He's a general manager. If he doesn't think the team would be okay with the moves he made, he shouldn't have made the moves.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously. But it was... that kind of article can be a little frustrating to read when it doesn't provide any other perspective, and it actually kind of chided in support of what he was saying rather than providing any sort of counterbalance. And personally, I did find it a little bit demeaning. And then there was another article that I guess the one that you and Ian talked about that was from, I guess, last week, which kind of said, well, of course the Capitals were going to be this bad. And what do you mean, of course they were going to be this? I mean, they were going to be bad because of the moves that they made. Well... I don't know. I know you said that you talked about it with Ian, and I really don't want to rehash it too much, and it's probably something that I probably better if I don't talk about too much.
That's fair. There's a way that like if a team is bad, that it's fine. They're like if you're a team, here's a team that was bad recently and we're still hella fun to watch. The Toronto Maple Leafs.
Exactly.
Because there's a plan, there's a progression towards something, and you can see, you know, players getting young players getting more ice than you'd want them to have if you had a filled out roster, but you know, there's lots of exciting stuff happening and the game pace is high, and that's tolerable. That's kind of exciting, actually. I mean, like, that was what the, you know, 07-08 Caps were. Mm-hmm. It's a different animal altogether, I think, if the team is bad because they're trying to do the things that they've been doing for the last 3 years, but they don't have the players, and the players they do have are not capable of doing those things anymore. And then you get this like low event, exhausted hockey. And I think more than anything, when the Caps, you know, before Matt Niskanen came back, whether you consider the Matt Niskanen return from injury or the Ovechkin Backstrom reunion to be like the precipitating event for the Capitals to be unawful again.
It's a Graevac return. I don't know what you're talking about.
But like, the team, the adjective I'd use for the team is just tired. They looked bleh for like they, well, game like and game out.
Care.
No, see, that's...
I'm just kidding. I am just...
So, listener, please jump back over to the Jabers Rink Radio podcast that accompanies this one, because I asked Adam if he believes that players quit on coaches, and more or less he said, yeah, because coaches do the same damn thing, and then eventually players get immune to it, or they get numb to it, which, like, by the way, I totally get. But, like, here's the thing, though. Like, I kind of think the cap players were there in May. You know? Yeah. Like, I don't think that they were super happy with the way that the playoffs went, both in roster choices and adventurousness. And, you know, I think that even guys like Dan Winnick, but up and down the lineup, like, that fourth line could have been more... could have taken more risks with, you know, higher upside, and that could have been paid off. But you see the Capitals do stuff like after an offensive zone face-off, you know, they retreat back to neutral unless it's a very clear possession. I mean, and the rare moments when, you know, Jake Beagle's out for an offensive zone face-off, the poor dude doesn't get any of those anymore. Anyway, I like, by the way, I'm sort of at the point where I'm willing to throw out the first 20 games. Like,
you're willing to throw them out?
I'm willing to disqualify them from consideration.
That's a lot of your sample there, Peter.
It's a bit, and I'm a sample size hound, but I'm willing to consider the option that I was just totally wrong about the Capitals, because what I was looking at was a function of roster fluctuations and injuries rather than who this team is going forward, meaning like the sample was not representative of what the population will be over 82 games. I'm willing to consider that, and I will think about that up until the new year, and then I'll revert to my original opinion like I always do. But, like, you know, you know, Matt Niskanen, Christian Juice didn't get a sweater until the middle of October.
Well, that's on nobody but the coach. I mean, that's a problem that could rear its ugly head again later as the year goes on.
True, but I mean, if you prove to that coach that player is good, I don't know. We've seen that. It's happened before.
Burakovsky got benched last year.
Burakovsky and Nate Schmidt didn't, you know, hardly play. I mean, he missed 22 games last year, I think.
It wasn't until if it hadn't been for an injury, he might not have even got back in for the playoffs.
So when's Reardon taken over?
I mean, now we're back to this. I mean, it's, I mean, listen, we've talked to, you and I have probably talked about this a bit off air. Listeners who've kind of heard me talk have heard me talk about it before. The Capitals choosing not to give Trotz that extension, I think, put him in a tough place. And if we, you know, you just mentioned kind of how we talked about players buying in. I feel like if a general manager, with the way that the NHL is structured, where coaches almost always are extended before the last year of their contract, if there was like kind of like a sign to a player that, like, I might not have to deal with this guy any longer if I don't buy in.
Yeah,
it was probably the Capitals kind of screwed Barry Trotz over in that regard, at least in my mind, and especially when we know that the Capitals didn't let Todd Reardon talk to anybody during the off season because teams were interested in poaching him. So. I mean, if the Capitals do make a move, which I don't think is going to happen, especially with how the Capitals have kind of looked a bit better since Niskanen came back. But if they did, I think Reardon would definitely be the guy. And I think he'd do pretty well as a head coach. And, you know, even if the Capitals do pretty well this year and you do see Barry Trotz finish the season, I still wouldn't be shocked if you see Todd Reardon take over for next season.
You said doo-doo.
I said doo-doo like twice, I think.
Yeah, it's an awkward situation. I really feel for Barry Trotz, who, like, for all the calls to fire the guy, I will say two things in his defense. One, he is the winningest coach in the National Hockey League since he took over in Washington. Mm-hmm. And two, the problems that the team is seeing right now are more a function, this may be a hot take, let me know, are more a function of the players available to him than his coaching decisions, which, when you think about it, are really not that profound. Give these dudes a sweater, give these dudes lots of ice, give these dudes a little bit of ice, and put these dudes together. Those are really the three decisions. Oh, and here's what I call the timeout, which is the most overrated, you know, coaching decision, when to pull the goalie, which you can argue that they've been goofing up lately, but I don't think they have.
They goofed last night, for sure.
No, they didn't. Alan May does this thing. God. Oh, okay, so actually, you're talking about, like, the time. Like they didn't have clean possession of the puck when they
took Hopi up. They should have pulled him, like, 45 seconds before that. The offensive zone draw after an icing, and the guys on the Kings had already been on the ice for like a minute at that point. The Capitals didn't pull Holtby, and then when they did decide to pull Holtby, they waited until they didn't have clear possession of the puck. It was a disaster. I mean, they really had I honest to God think that was one of the worst managed goalie pullings I've seen from the Capitals in a couple years.
So of the dudes behind the bench, who calls the shot on when to get Holtby off?
I'm trying to remember.
Reardon, Forsythe, Lambert.
It was not Trotz who did the hand motion. I mean, I sit in 430, so I'm looking down, and you know, I was just staring at the bench like, what are you doing? When are you going to pull this guy off?
So I don't remember. When was the last game? It was in the last week or two, but the Caps gave up some shorties, or maybe they scored a shorty. Oh no, sorry, they gave up an empty net goal, and I think Alan May in the post game ripped into coaching for pulling the goalie too early, which is a classic Alan Mayism. And next time I see him, I'm gonna pull up metahockey.com and find the ideal time to pull the goalie is like with 6 minutes left or some jive like that, which is so great that the league, the orthodoxy evolved on when to pull the goalie because a complete idiot in Colorado just lucked into it
for him at one point. Yes.
And all of a sudden it's for totally spurious reasons, but everyone's like, yeah, Wah did it. It's working great. Everyone, let's do that. And so it used to be a minute 20 was the earliest you'd see it. Now it's
I think the Caps were a minute 30 yesterday.
2 minutes and change a lot of the time. But yeah. Okay. Anyway, should have been earlier. 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes is when you pull the goalie.
I really think that they, because of the icing, I really thought the Kings guys were tired and the Caps should have pulled their guys earlier. But it doesn't really matter if the Capitals were going to pull their goalie and the guy they were going to put out there was Graovac or Chason. I don't think it would have made a difference anyway.
What is up with that? Why is Chason the guy that they put on for 6-on-5?
I think Vrana was on the bench and I'm going what are you doing right now?
Maybe he was gassed. I don't know. But I was like, are they really doing this inside of the Rush Machine
chat? They do it every time.
And so I missed the game before and they're like, dude, they put Chasing out as the extra man a couple games ago. I'm like, no way. They're like, yeah, no, seriously, this is a thing they talked about. And someone in the room is like, you know what we need to do? You know what this, you know what'll get us over the top here? Chasing. And let's do that. And they've done it repeatedly. And I pulled up the, there's the data's super small, but apparently they were pretty darn close to scoring 6-on-5 in the previous game. I think that was the Calgary game.
I don't know. It's bad.
It's silly. Hey, Strings, thank you so much for kicking it, and thank you for having me as a guest on your thing.
Of course.
Can you tell the listeners where they can find you?
Sure. You can follow me on Twitter at StringHamA. It's string, then ham, then the letter A. It's not too hard to find.
Steamed hams?
String, then ham. My takes are usually pretty mild, but occasionally I'll give you guys some good insight, and hopefully you'll give me a follow.
Now let me clarify that though. Your takes are not actually that mellow. You have moments of punctuated equilibrium where you go white hot nuclear face of the sun, and I'm just going, wow. Strings is,
something really pissed him off today.
Strings is running hot today. Most of the time you are the more mellow fellow on the tweets.
Just takes one or two things and all of a sudden it's just this is it.
All right, man. Well, thank you for hanging. This was a blast. I appreciate it.
Definitely was. Thanks a lot, Peter.
This has been Russian Machine Never Breaks, the podcast. But now it's over. Nothing to see here. Move along.